Dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantinilayam, the most happening place on the planet. And the last few weeks have been days of deep reflection and introspection, deep searching within. And this only gets more intense as we move closer to the Aradhana Day. And those questions again assail your mind. Your heart finds it hard to reconcile. Why did Swami go so early? He said he will be with us for 96 years. What happened suddenly? And even if he had to go, why did he go in this manner? Why did he undergo so much of suffering? Isn't he the Lord? Isn't he the all-powerful one? He could have done anything, isn't it? And how much I miss him. I still miss him. I don't know how I have survived all these years. How glorious every moment with him was. How every second with him was spent in eager anticipation of witnessing his beautiful form again. How I rejoiced in his enigmatic uncertainties. How I was thrilled at the manifestations of his unbounded love every single day in a new form, in a new way. If one day it was a double round of darshan, another day it was double aarti. The third day it was a precious chain for a silent Sai worker who has been working in the canteen for decades. On the fourth day it was a torrent of blessing for birthday boys. The fifth day it was a double abhayasta. And abhayasta not once but twice, capped with a beautiful smile. Sixth day it was vibhuti day. Everyone who had a letter received a vibhuti packet. The seventh day was a contemplative one, when Swami was deeply lost, pouring through our innermost feelings submitted to him in bits of paper, and we forgot ourselves just staring at his innocent and sublime self. Everything around was so silent except for the sonorous chants of the Vedas. This is how every week passed, and we treasured in the deep recesses of our hearts each one of those looks, that precious look, that priceless gesture, that word, that smile, even his sweet denials. Everything he did was for us, for our joy, for our happiness, for our upliftment. And this beautiful world, this heaven in which we were in, where every day was so fresh and new and filled with so much of promise and bliss, this world crumbled. And when it crumbled, it was such a rude shock. It was too much for this being to bear the pain. I for one never believed that I will see this day in my life. I never thought that I will live to see that my Lord is no more on earth. Somehow I never imagined that the avatar will enact such a heart-wrenching play, such a heart-wrenching drama. In fact, today is April 21st, 2016, and in 2011, April 24th was a Sunday, and this year too, 2016, April 24th is a Sunday. And that Sunday, early in the morning, when the news came, I never believed. I thought it is all a drama. At any moment, Swami will rise. And that is going to be the most defining moment of the Satya Sai Avatar. I was absolutely sure of this. I was sure of this on 24th, on 25th of April, on 26th of April, even when all the ministers and the Prime Minister of the country came and offered flowers to the divine body, I still believed that it was all a drama. I never thought that this is the end of the physical sojourn of Satya Sai Avatar. And I continued to believe this till the very last second on April 27th. Only when the body was lowered into Mother Earth did I cry. And then the dam just broke. I was lost. I was completely devastated. There seemed no reason for me to continue my existence. I did not know why I should continue to live. Everything seemed meaningless, listless, lifeless. And I just went into deep depression. Deep depression, like so many of us. And weeks of that deep depression led on to a different journey. After I had cried enough, that deep depression transformed into deep introspection. And after days of deep introspection, this deep introspection gave birth to deep insights. And those were not insights. I would like to call them insights. INSAIGHTS. Because every thought was inspired, guided and revealed by Sai. It was Sai from within who gave me such profound messages. And if I'm alive today and continue to do his work, it is because of those moments of insights, those revealing moments when Sai opened up some things within me. And it is this understanding, it is this energy, it is this revelation which keeps me going. And I know, I'm absolutely sure that this is the journey of every Sai devotee, every person who loved Swami to bits and was in bits and pieces after he left. And I think the best way to inspire each other now is to relive those moments and share those insights. And by Bhagwan's grace and with his permission, let us attempt to do this on this evening. The Aradhana day is just a few days away. And let us ruminate on those moments and those instances of insights. And to help us in this endeavor, Bhagwan has arranged to send to the studios today a dear Sai brother from the university, Brother Sai Giridhar. So we will listen to what the Aradhana day means to him and what were his moments of introspection and revelation. So that is what we will do in this last hour of Thursday Live, coming to you straight from the studios of Radio Sai.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
So welcome to Outside Inside, Deep Inside. And today, as I just mentioned, we discuss about the true Sai Aradhana. What is the sadhana we should do to observe the Sai Aradhana day? And we will get insights into this through the experience of Brother Sai Giridhar. So welcome, Brother Giridhar, to Outside Inside, Deep Inside.
Sai Ram, Brother Bishu, and all the devotees all over the world. This is a very solemn occasion for every dear child devotee of Bhagwan. My memory takes me back to the 24th of April, 2011. As you mentioned, we received the news in the morning. I was at my residence at Parthi. And when I heard the news, my whole being went blank. In the sense, I was not able to assimilate what was happening. And immediately, I just felt a rush to run to the hostel and meet the elders in the Sai family and discuss with them what should be our next step. This, I would say, is the most obvious outcome of the kind of love and training which Swami has given all his children. That even at the face of such, I would say, a calamity for a Sai child, a Sai devotee, he inspires us to immediately think of what should be our role in the seva. So immediately we rushed to the hostel and we met the elders there and we discussed, "Sir, we heard this news. Is it true, first of all?" Then I came to know that the announcement was made in the mandir as well, and that it is indeed reality that we'll have to come face to face with. And with all the teachers at the hostel, we took our hostel van and immediately rushed to the mandir. And we started planning what next. in the sense, we knew that thousands of shattered hearts are going to throng the divine portals of Prashanthi Nilayam. And what should be done in those moments to give solace and to, I mean, how is it possible even to console a devotee in such a situation? We had no idea of what's going to happen, how it is going to be done. But again, Bhagwan, since he is universal and he is eternal in his nature, he was there for us. Though physically he left the mortal coil or he became invisible, but he was still there for us, guiding every step of the way. And the whole planning and execution was done in the bhajan hall of Prashanthi Nilayam as to how the devotees' darshan will be facilitated, how they should be taken care of, how people should be made sensitive to their feelings and emotions, at the same time maintain a particular discipline to help as many devotees to have darshan as possible. All these things were going on back to back. In fact, there was hardly any time for us to stay for a moment and absorb what was happening there. In fact, I remember there was so much of planning and execution that was going on in the bhajan hall and outside where Swami's divine form was at state for everybody to have darshan. All this was happening, and in fact, I remember that I did not even get a chance to have darshan of Swami's physical form. Swami's form was already in the Kulwant hall, and that was the kind of hectic program that was running there, again inspired by Bhagwan. And it was only when I got a short break of around 1 minute in between, I could run to the door of the bhajan hall and actually see with my eyes whether this is really true, because I did not know if it was true. Everybody was telling me that announcements were being made, but my heart never really accepted what was happening. So I went to the bhajan hall door and peeped from there to see if it's really true, and there I saw the beautiful form of our beloved Bhagwan lying in state. And as I said, the way he has loved and lived with us and inspired us, he doesn't give us the opportunity to simply look at the occasion with remorse, but rather make the best effort possible to bring succor and comfort to everybody. And that was happening. 3 days passed, and as you also express, brother, I had very similar feelings. In the sense, I felt that this is a huge divine drama which is happening. We had heard many times from senior devotees that Swami had said that the whole world will throng to his lotus feet. So I was wondering, possibly this is the best drama. Means people have heard of the resurrection of Jesus, and you know how many followers are there today, a good 2000 years after that event has happened. So I was wondering that possibly this is another drama, a divine drama of the cosmic divinity, just like how he did in the era of Jesus. The Father is here to enact a similar drama. And that was the hope. And with that hope, the only thing in my mind, to tell you frankly, was to do the best possible seva there. And I was sure that, you know, Swami would get up any moment and then the whole world would know, because all the television networks, everybody were there. So the whole world was watching this happening. And this was, of course, my personal emotions that I'm sharing. But after the 3 days, you know, when the final moment came, where Swami's physical form was being installed in the sannidhi, in Swami's samadhi, it was only at that moment, after the installation was done, that I became a little more contemplative. I did not lose hope still, because Swami is capable of anything. You know, when he was physically here, he has manifested in physical form in multiple places.
Yes.
And there is nothing that the cosmic divinity cannot do.
Correct.
He is the supreme self and the whole creation is his. And even this play of, you know, changing the dress or changing the body is very simple and ordinary to him. So I was very confident that anything, anytime, you know, is possible. But there was this deep introspection that was happening, where I asked Swami within, said, Swami, now what? So it's a very simple, straightforward question to our beloved Lord. Swami, now what? The inner voice that, I would say the tuning to the inner voice in those few days was so intense that the inner voice was so crystal clear. And there were no doubts whether it is the mind speaking and all that. There were no questions at all. It was so crystal clear. The inner voice told me, it is time for Sarupyam.
Sarupyam.
Sarupyam. It is time for Sarupyam. This was on the 27th of April 2011. It is time for Sarupyam. It was only after the inner voice told me this that I realized that Bhagwan had scripted such a wonderful divine master plan. Immediately, as soon as I heard the word Sarupyam, my memory raced back to the year 2005. It was again the month of April, on 7th of April. Swami stayed back at Prashanthi Nilayam and he had not gone to Whitefield that year. And he went to Kodaikanal straight from Prashanthi Nilayam. It was 7th of April and you know, Prashanthi Nilayam or Puttaparthi in the summers gets really hot. And Swami used to sit outside while the Vedic chantings used to go on or the bhajans would go on for a long time. So we felt that we should give some kind of entertainment to Swami, you know. So we had prepared a quiz program on Bhagavatam, Ramayanam and Swami's life. And we had made four teams, Satya, Dharma, Shanti and Prema. We sought Swami's permission and he had also given permission to put up the program. That evening on 7th of April, we all sat in the third block, that is in front of Ganesh Portico, where Swami used to be seated. And we had a card in our hand. And when Swami came for darshan, he saw the card. He took his throne, his seat at the Ganesh Portico and asked for the card. The card was presented. Swami saw everything, blessed, sent the boys back. Then suddenly he turned towards one of the brothers who was serving Swami and he told him to call somebody, one of the elder senior devotees of Bhagwan who was present there. And immediately that devotee rushed in and Swami asked for a podium and mic to be kept. And Swami told that senior devotee what he needs to speak. He was giving him specific guidelines on what he should speak. And the devotee was known to give scholarly talks, so he gave an amazing scholarly talk for almost 15 minutes. After he concluded, Bhagwan looked at the students and said, Pillalu evaraina matlaartara? Will any boys speak? None of us got up because all of us were prepared for a quiz program. None of us were ready for a speech in front of Swami. And it is such a big thing for us to speak in Swami's presence. So since we were unprepared, all of us were, you know, with our heads down or looking at each other if somebody else is prepared. You know, nobody was getting up. Swami looked into my eyes and he called me. It was an eye-to-eye gesture, you know, not a physical gesture. He didn't call me with his hands. It was an eye-to-eye. He just looked deep into my eyes and gestured with his eyes, come. You know, with his eyes and his eyelids, you know, come. I very conveniently avoided that because I was totally unprepared for that situation. And I was also worried if I get up and Swami says, not you, I would feel very bad, you know. So that was the emotions or the feeling that was going on. I was in my first year postgraduate at that point of time. And Swami again asked the warden, are there no boys to speak? Pillal ever lera? Are there no boys who can speak? So one of the brothers got up and Swami immediately told him, Nu kaadu kucho, you sit down. And he said, Nu chala matladav. That is, you have spoken many times this year. And that year happened to be a very dynamic year, I should say, for the students in the sense, wonderful opportunity because Swami used to ask for back-to-back programs. In the month of March even, that is when the final exams were going on, Swami would ask for programs. And this brother who got up was in his second year postgraduate. So being the final year students, they got many chances to put up programs. And Swami looked at him and said, you have made many presentations, so sit down. So again he looked into my eyes. It's again an eye-to-eye contact and again with his eyelids, he's calling me, he's inviting me. He says, come, come here. He gestures. And this time I felt that, you know, whatever happens, I just have to go. It is the Lord's call. Who cares what happens after that? So just go. So I ran to Swami. And Swami did not say anything. So it was good to that extent. I went to his presence. And he was looking at, you know, letters and other things as if he had not called me. And when I went near him, he said, huh, are you talking? That is what Swami asked me. Are you talking? Of course, I had no time to analyze what Swami was saying or internalize it. I was just completely blank. And I told him that. I told Swami, Swami, enakku onnum theriyadhu Swami, neenga dhaan pesanum. I don't know anything. Swami, you only have to speak. Swami told in Telugu, po edo cheppu po. He said, go and tell something. You know, so I just went and stood at the podium and torrential flow of thoughts are coming and the words are flowing in harmony and I have no idea of what I am speaking. In fact, the thoughts were flowing and the speech was in absolute harmony with that for almost 13 minutes. You know, later others were saying that it was almost on par with the scholarly talk given by the elder devotee and I had no idea about the content which was coming out. It was just flowing. And at the end of the 13 minutes, there was a big full stop in my mind. Means again it went blank. And a panic was setting in. That's when Swami turned towards me and said, Chalu, Chalu, which means enough, enough. Immediately I was more than happy to conclude and went to Bhagwan. And Swami waved his hand and materialized a ring. It was a very unique looking ring and very similar to the twisted, the entangled snake structure you see in the hospital symbols.
Yes.
Also in yogic traditions you call it the kundalini snakes, you know, the intertwined snakes, like the DNA.
Yes.
Structure. So this ring was made of small, small green stones, which were in this kind of a DNA kind of structure. And Swami showed it to me and then asked, what is this? I was actually blank at that point. So I said, Swami, it's a ring. I was totally overwhelmed by what was happening. I said, Swami, it's a ring. He said, of course it's a ring. What else it is? So I looked at it and said, Swami, it's a snake, because it looked like the kundalini, you know, snake. So I said, Swami, it's a snake. Swami said, kadu kadu, not that, not that. And he said, idi salokyam, sarupyam, samipyam, sayujyam. Edi cheppu? He said, come on, repeat. I said, Swami, I have no idea of what these words are. Please forgive me. And Swami was so compassionate, he said, no, no, you repeat after me. Nen cheptanu tarvata nuvu cheppu. I will tell and then you repeat. You know, he said, salokyam, salokyam, sarupyam, sarupyam, samipyam, samipyam, sayujyam, sayujyam. And he put the ring in the finger and it actually forms four S's. You can make out four S symbols there. Each of the S he touched again and again. He repeated this 3, 4, 5 times. He said, salokyam, sarupyam, samipyam, sayujyam. It was the first time I was hearing these words, salokyam. These are actually four levels of mukti. And I was very inquisitive to know. Somehow I never asked Swami at that point what they meant. But as I said, I was too overwhelmed at that point. But after I came back, of course, I started looking at Swami's discourses to see if Swami has spoken about these. And of course, he had spoken many times about these four levels of liberation or mukti. And Swami said, Salokya Mukti means, this is the most simplistic translation of or the meaning of these words. Sa Lokya means, in each of these four words, Sa represents divinity. And the later part of the word is what signifies what level of liberation it is. Sa Lokya means to live in the kingdom of God. It is the first level of liberation. Sa Rupyam means to attain the divine form, Rupam means form, of the Lord. Samipyam means to attain close proximity to the Lord. Samip means proximity. Samipyam means close proximity to the Lord. That is almost as if to say to serve Him both inside out. That is, you are serving Him internally as well as externally. That kind of proximity. You are literally soaked in Him inside and out. That kind of a thing is Samipyam. And Sayujyam means to be one with Him. There is no you left in this. There's just one without a second. So that is Sayujyam. So this was the meaning which Swami had given.
And in many discourses, actually Bhagwan gives these four stages. And he first refers to Salokyam, then he mentions Samipyam, then he talks about Sarupyam, and then Sayujyam. But to you, he mentioned after Salokyam, Sarupyam.
Exactly. And that was a very, very deep and significant change that Swami had made there to swap Samipyam and Sarupyam.
Mm-hmm.
You rightly said, Salokyam, Samipyam, Sarupyam, Sayujyam is the usual order.
Yes, that's what Bhagwan has mentioned in
yes.
this discourse.
But then when he gave me this ring and he repeated it 5 times, you know, so that I get it right and it's clear in my head that Sarupyam comes second. And then third is Samipyam. You know, he swapped that. Of course, there are a few discourses where Swami has mentioned it in this manner, where Sarupyam comes second, but they're totally different contexts. But again here, as I was looking at the examples given by Swami, you know, for Sarupyam, because let's go back to where we started. This instruction of it is time for Sarupyam had come on 27th April 2011 as an inner voice. And if Swami had not built a background for this many years before
in 2005 that, itself.
Yeah, in 2005, 7th April 2005, if he had not told me about this, I would have had no idea of what this Sarupyam is or what the significance of this word is. So I started looking into what it really means more deeper, and Swami gives the example of Bharata for Sarupyam. So it now takes us back to the episode in Ramayana, where the scene is that Rama had already gone on an exile to the forest, and Bharata had come to know what had happened, what had transpired in Ayodhya, and he rushes to meet Rama, and there Rama and Bharata, you know, it's a beautiful discussion between the two brothers, where they are debating with each other, trying to convince each other that, you know, Bharata wanted Rama to take back the kingdom. Rama says, no Bharata, you rule, let me finish our father's promise and then come back after 14 years. This was a huge tussle that was going on between the two. And it was inconclusive. So they refer the decision to the two great jnanis. One was a Brahmarishi himself, that is sage Vasishtha. And the other one was a Rajarishi. That is King Janaka. Both of them were present at that point. And when the decision was referred to them, you know, Vasishtha says that this kind of love between Bharata and Rama, I am unable to contain in my otherwise absolutely tranquil mind. And when my mind is disturbed, I don't want to give any decision. So I request Rajarishi Janaka to speak about this. So Rajarishi Janaka, who was very still at that point of time, he gave this decision and said, this is the most beautiful tussle between Dharma and Prema, where Bharata represents Prema and Rama represents Dharma. And he said, when the tussle is there between Prema and Dharma, Prema always emerges victorious. This is a very important point in the context of what we are discussing. When there is a tussle between Prema and Dharma, Prema is always victorious. This is what Janaka says. And everybody, all the Ayodhya Vasis who are all pining for Rama to return to Ayodhya, come back to them, and Bharata and Shatrughna, all of them who are pining for Rama to come back, they were all joyous, thinking that they have ultimately won in their prayers. And at that point, Janaka, you know, very characteristically, just like Swami says, Kani, you know, but he says, Prema also has its dharma. The dharma of Prema is to seek to find out in what lies the true happiness or bliss of my beloved. Janaka says, in love you cannot impose your will on your beloved. You should find out what is the will of your beloved and merge yourself in that will. Merge your will in his will. He says, that is the true dharma of Prema. So you find out what is the will of Rama, in what lies his happiness. And you must accept that, Bharata, then alone can you call this true Prema. And when he hears this, Bharata immediately falls to his knees and realizes his mistake and falls at the lotus feet of Rama and says, Rama, whatever you say, I am ready to do. Because your will is the only will that matters. So I surrender myself entirely at your lotus feet. Whatever you wish, Rama, that is what I will fulfill. So Rama immediately then says that the mission for which I have come does not lie in the comforts of Ayodhya. The mission for which I have come is blessing the devotees who are waiting for me for thousands of years in the forests of Dandakaranya. The mission for which I have come is there is another one who is awaiting his liberation in Lanka. So I am here to deliver all these people. And once I finish my mission here, I will definitely return. But until then, on my behalf, you rule this kingdom. This is what Rama says to Bharata, and he gives his padukas. This whole episode is so powerful, and every aspect of this scene is very, very symbolic and relevant to every Sai devotee who has experienced the pain of separation from the Lord. Because Swami said, it is time for Sarupyam. The example for Sarupyam is Bharata. So what is Sarupyam? How do you attain Sarupyam Mukti? Bharata, in those 14 years of separation from Rama, what did he do? That is the key to understand how to attain Sarupya Mukti. And in those 14 years, Bharata had Swami's padukas as his reference point. You know, his padukas were his guide. And everything he would consult the padukas of the Lord. He would put his prayers forward at the lotus feet of our Swami. And then he would ask the Lord, what is the right thing to do? And every moment in his life, as Swami describes in Ramkatha Rasavahini and many other discourses on Ramayana, Bharata was engaged in Nirgunopasana. Like how Lakshmana was engaged in Sagunopasana, directly serving the physical form of the Lord, Bharata was engaged in Nirgunopasana. While he was physically separated from the Lord, all the time, every single moment of his life, he thought only about Rama, Rama and Rama alone. Any decision that would come to him, he would see what would give joy and pleasure to Rama. If this was done in this manner, would Rama be happy? This was his only benchmark or yardstick to measure the correctness of the decision. So everything that he did, be it breathing, sleeping, eating, even his dress code, everything, he became like Rama. He lived in forest. He never returned back to Ayodhya. What this means is, in our parlance, it doesn't mean really that, you know, everybody retires to a forest or wears an ochre robe. That, because Swami was very clear. But that is not what he wants from his devotees. What Swami made very certain was, he said, Man mein Ram, haath mein kaam. Or he used to say, hands in the society, the heads in the forest. So that is the life of Bharata. In the sense that though he was executing every single duty of his as the appointed ruler of Ayodhya, his mind was eternally immersed in Rama. For 14 years he did such intense contemplation, and the padukas of Rama also have a very deep significance here. Because Swami says, even the Guru Paduka Stotram says that, you know, Akhanda Mandalakaram Vyaptam Yena Characharam Tat Padam Darshitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Tat padam darshitam yena means to have the darshan of the lotus feet of the Guru means to realize his teaching in our life. That is the real darshan of the lotus feet. That is, we have heard his message. We have put into practice something or the other. But when we realize the message of the Lord as a direct experience in life, that is when we truly have had the darshan of the lotus feet of the Lord. That is why if you look at the first bhajan which the Sadguru sang, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam, isn't it? Because the word Guru here, Guru means Gunatita Rupa Varjita. Rupa Varjita means there is no form. Gunatita means he is beyond all gunas, all attributes. If there is no form, Manasa Bhajare Guru Charanam. So how does the lotus feet of the Guru look like so that the mind worships it, you know? So that is the meaning given here by Bharata through the padukas of Rama. That is, he had the darshan of Rama's lotus feet every day. It means he realized the true meaning and the purpose of the avatar's teachings in his day-to-day life. Practical, experiential realization. That is the darshan of the Lord's lotus feet. How it happens? By having deep love for the Lord. It's no other way. Bharata had such deep love for the Lord that every moment he thought only about him. Every action that he performed, he measured and with the metrics of whether Rama would be pleased by this action. So all that he did was, you know, Rama, 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 Rama. That's it. It was not a passive contemplation on Rama. It was an active contemplation. While performing all his duties, in every work that he did, he saw only Rama. That was the intense tapasya, the penance which Bharata had done for 14 long years. And if we slightly rewind back into the story in Ramayana, the moment where Bharata and the Ayodhya Vasis, they were pleading with Rama to return, that was the exact scene which was happening here in Prashanti Nilayam and all over the world. All the devotees were like Bharatas. All the devotees were like Ayodhya Vasis. They were begging Swami, Swami, don't leave us and go. Swami, please come back. Swami, please come back. But what we have to understand here is love can never fail. Because I used to ask this question every single day of those 30 days which Swami was there in the hospital. I used to ask Swami, maybe I don't have true love for you. That's why you are not answering my prayers. But do you mean to say there's not a single devotee in the entire world? Means whose love for you is not genuine? Not even one devotee is there. Because you said one devotee is enough, isn't it? So is there not one single devotee in the entire world whose love for you is genuine and 100%? Whose surrender is 100%, and when that devotee prays to you, you should return, isn't it? I used to ask him, question him every day in this manner. But it was only after this message that he gave, it is time for Sarupyam, that it became clear to me that love will always emerge victorious. This every devotee in the world, every devotee of our beloved Lord Satya Sai should understand this. Their love will not fail. Their love will always be victorious. There is no question about that. But the only point is, prema also has its dharma. The dharma of prema is to ask our beloved Lord, in what lies His will, His happiness. If He has taken a decision, that should be the foremost joy for us. That Swami, this is Your decision, I take it with all my heart. And whatever instruction You give me, I am ready to follow. Just like how Bharata said to Rama. Bharata, believe me, brother, and all the brothers and sisters listening to this program, the love that Bharata had for Rama was unimaginable. He could not stay for a single moment away from Rama, you know, either in thought or physically. Even when he moved away from Ayodhya, it was on duty. His thoughts were always on Rama. And he knew that he could always come back to him. But then when this exile happened and Rama was to leave him and go for 14 long years, that was something which Bharata could not tolerate. He had such deep love for Rama. How can that love fail? And that is the similar case with many, many devotees of Bhagavan. Their love can never fail. But prema has its dharma. That is the message which Swami gives in Sarupyam. Prema has its dharma. Swami's will should be the foremost thing for His devotees. We have to merge our will in His will. There is no other choice if the love is true. And what happens to Bharata is, he takes to his heart the instructions of Rama and he transforms his entire life as a reflection, reaction, resound of the message of Rama. And after 14 years, when Rama returns and Bharata also comes back to Ayodhya from Nandigrama, and both of them are walking and coming, the three mothers are not able to recognize who is Rama and who is Bharata. Both of them look absolutely the same. And Bharata had to fall at Rama's feet. He immediately understood. Swami says, Bharata is sukshma buddhi. There is another hint here in Sarupyam. That is, the devotees have to develop sukshma buddhi. Why? Because the indweller is the most subtlest of the subtle. And if the mind is engaged completely in the grossness of the world, it will not be able to perceive the inner divinity. So it is the subtlest of the subtle. And Swami says, Bharata represents sukshma buddhi, the most subtlest of intellect which can perceive the presence of divinity immediately. And Bharata, who had the Sukshma Buddhi, recognized the predicament of Ayodhya Vasis, that they are not able to differentiate who is Rama, who is Bharata. Immediately Bharata falls at Rama's feet. So they know whom they have to garland, and they all ran and garlanded Rama. And this oneness of the form of the Lord is called Sarupyam, and it is called Sarupya Mukti. And Swami's instruction on that day was, it is time for Sarupyam. And the Divine Master Plan doesn't end here. If you look at it, we have based all this contemplation, all this inquiry on Bharata, who is an example given in Swami's discourse. But for me to have firmness in understanding that it is really this message about Bharata's life that has to be emulated by us, you know, the Master is such that his plan can never be incomplete. It has to be perfect, because it is perfect. What happened was, in the year 2005, again, in April, Swami had given this ring, and, you know, he introduced these words, Salokyam, Sarupyam, Samipyam, Sayujyam. In the month of February 2005, in fact, on 24th Feb 2005, our class had put up a program in Swami's presence by the name Tyage Naike Amritatva Manashu. And in that drama, there were three scenes that were enacted, and one of the scene was exactly the scene that we have just discussed, that the scene between Bharata and Rama, their separation, then Bharata's installing Rama's padukas at the throne. And here it's very important to understand that Bharata never sat on the throne.
Yes.
He installed Rama's padukas on the throne. He always sat down as a servant and executed his duty. That is a very important aspect for devotees to understand. And at the same time, what happens is, in the drama we had shown, the concluding scene, Rama and Bharata come and they hug each other. It is the greatest gift for Bharata, which represents the union of the individual self to the divine self. The individual self, meaning the Atma and Paramatma, are one and the same. That scene represents that realization. And after that drama was over, I was given an opportunity to hold Bhagwan's hand and bring him amidst our boys to take group photograph. And after the group photograph with the actors, you know, the support staff, that is the costumes, the sets boys, who work equally hard for the drama, they all came and they took photograph with Bhagwan. So as I moved out, I had gone and taken a wonderful spot near where the doctors used to sit those days, near the steps there, so that when Swami would go back to interview room, one more close darshan could be had of Bhagwan. With that idea, I was sitting there. And Swami came up the slope onto the Ganesh portico. And all the time he was asking something to the boys. I was not sure what he was asking. But when he came onto the Ganesh portico and turned, he looked at me and he said, "Are you Bharata?" And I immediately said, "Yes, Swami." And he said, "Chala santosham." He said, "Very happy." This happened on 24th Feb 2005. And Swami just walked off. Later, the brothers were telling me that all along, as Swami was walking towards Ganesh Portico and the interview room, he was asking all the students who were flanking his path, "Are you Bharata? Are you Bharata? Are you Bharata?" And they were all saying, "No, no." So when he went on to the Ganesh Portico, he looked at me and said, "Are you Bharata?" I said, "Yes, Swami." Because those years, Swami was so gracious to shower so many dramas, opportunities to his students and devotees, that role would have passed on in the memory as one more opportunity at his lotus feet. But by creating this scene of asking everybody, "Are you Bharata?" and coming up and then confirming with me, "Are you Bharata? Were you the one who did that role in this scene of Rama separation?" He made it sure that this particular role is etched in the deep recesses of my heart as one of the most golden memories with Bhagwan. And that was necessary for me to understand that in the Divine Master Plan, when on 27th April 2011, when this inner voice said, "Sarupyam, it is time for Sarupyam," it has to be understood in this context. And Bharata was the best example for Sarupyam. See, the divine plan is so intricate and unique. If you look at Bharata's life, in his life too, Sarupyam comes first and Samipyam comes second.
Yes.
You know, like you are mentioning, it is not Salokyam, Samipyam, Sarupyam, Sayujyam in Bharata's life. Because if you take the simple meanings of these levels of mukti, Salokyam is living in the kingdom of God.
Yes.
Which Bharata anyway got to live in Ayodhya with Rama. But Samipyam, that is both the inner realization and the outer realization, that is to serve the Lord both inside and outside, is something which Bharata did not get at that point of time, because they had immediately moved to Sage Vasishtha's ashram for their learnings, where they would serve the Guru first. And as soon as they came back, in no time, Sage Vishwamitra comes and takes Rama and Lakshmana for his mission, and the end of the journey culminated in their marriage. Rama's marriage with Mother Sita and other three brothers with Urmila, Mandavi and Shrutakirti, and they all returned to Ayodhya, and within no time Bharata and Shatrughna had to go to Kaikeya Raja, that is the current day Kashmir, and they were separated again. And before they could return, you know, all these events transpired in Ayodhya, and Rama had to go on exile. So Bharata never got a chance to actually serve Rama in that manner, and he also did not have an opportunity to realize his inner self. Both these opportunities were presented to him only after Sarupyam, that is after the 14 years of physical separation with Rama, where he did this intense penance and he realized his self as Rama, and he got to serve Rama as his inner self, he got to serve Rama as the physical, beautiful avataric form as well. Both the chances he got, that was Samipyam. But for Bharata, Samipyam came after Sarupyam. First he had the period of 14 years period of separation and intense penance and intense sadhana. That happened, Sarupyam happened, followed by Samipyam, and of course finally Sayujyam. So Bharata is the perfect example here, I feel, for us to understand as devotees of Bhagwan, that it is really time for Sarupyam. It is not a time to remorse. It is a time to pull up our socks. In the native Indian language, they say, Kamar Bandhana Mane, which means to be in all preparedness, in all readiness as the soldiers of Satya Sai, to awaken the spirit of implicit obedience to the Lord, to awaken the spirit of inquiry within. I must add to this, Bharata was known for Nirgunopasana, what he did in those 14 years. And since Swami gave a reference to Sarupyam and Bharata, it is important to make another connection in this whole master plan. When Swami gave this ring on 7th of April 2005, after he explained all this Salokyam, Sarupyam and all, I asked Swami one question. It is a question which answers the question of devotees today, because everywhere we go, anybody we meet, the students who join the portals of Satsai organization newly, you know, the new students who have not had the chance to physically interact with Bhagwan, all of them have only one question: how do I connect to my God? How do I connect to Swami? You know, how do I be in constant touch with Swami? And Swami had told many times in his discourses that you and I are one. But the only thing that separates you from me is your ego. You know, ego is a very misunderstood concept, because many people mistake ego for arrogance, ego for showing attitude and the likes of that. But ego is a very, very, very subtle thing. It is extremely subtle. And what is ego, Swami explained, is ego is identification with body. In fact, the meaning of body again here is very subtle. There are not one, but four levels of bodies that we have. There is the gross body, which is called sthul sharir. There is the subtle body, which is called sukshma sharir. There is causal body, which is called Karan Sharir, and there is supra-causal body, which is called Mahakaran Sharir. There are four bodies which are there. So when you say ego, ego, of course, the grossness of the ego is association with the physical body, no doubt, gross body. But ego goes very, very subtle, and for every spiritual sadhaka, they have to be careful with this particular aspect, that even identification with the sukshma, Karan and Mahakaran is ego. So, if ego has to be destroyed, identification with all the levels of the body has to be transcended, and that can happen only by the grace of Sadguru. So that day an opportunity presented and I did not want to miss, and I asked Swami, how to fight this ego? And Swami just leant back on his chair beautifully and said, where is ego? I said, Swami, it is in the mind. Just to elaborate on this, the idea of mind is actually encompassing all the four bodies. If you look at the Vedantic idea of mind, what mind really is, it encompasses all the four bodies actually, including the gross body. But in simplistic understanding, we understand the gross body as body, subtle, causal and supracausal as mind. And that same mind is Prakriti also, nature. So, Swami asked, where is this ego? I said, Swami, in the mind. Swami said, remove the mind, it will go away. I said, Swami, but how to remove the mind? He said, very simple. And he pointed to his own physical form and he said, Chudu, see, I am not this body. I am not this mind. Where is the place for I? I am not this body. I am not this mind. Where is the place for I? At that point, I was not very sure of what it was. So I said, Swami, what sadhana I should do for this? And then Swami just said, in one line in English, go and sit in your seat. Go and sit in your seat. And that sitting in your seat can happen only by the grace of Sadguru. In the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yad gatva nani vartante tat dhama paramamam. Means, that throne, that seat, that abode is truly mine, where once you go, there is no point of return. That transcends all the ideas and identifications of body and mind. So every devotee has this opportunity in this living lifetime to identify themselves in their true identity. That is, I am not this body, I am not this mind, which means I am not stula, sukshma, karan, mahakaran, I am none of these. Then Swami asks, where is the place for I? Then where is the ego? So if you sit in your real seat, then there is no separation from God. And that real seat is our original identity. That real seat is what is samadhi. That real seat is attained only by the grace of Sadguru. So I find it as a responsibility of a devotee to intensely contemplate on this truth that we are every day, at least half an hour every day, and remain in this, and with the prayer to Swami that, Swami, allow me to realize who I really am. Make me sit in my seat.
Amazing. I think it's very, very relevant what you mentioned. In the current times, we have all experienced being in the kingdom of God. There are new devotees who are coming into the realm of Salukyam. You are coming into the kingdom of God. But now, we have to move into that stage of Sarupyam, where we make, to put it very simply, our life's His message. And once we do that, and we do that with intensity, we will start experiencing His proximity, inside and outside. That is what is Samipyam. And it will come to a stage where we experience His proximity so intensely every second of the day that there nothing remains as our will and His will.
Absolutely.
That is when the Sayujyam happens. You know, just like Lakshmana says to Rama, when Rama asks him to build a hut as per your desire, as you think fit, and that's where Lakshmana says that, where is the question of my will? And I think that is where we'll probably reach. Once you take to practicing His message and very intensely determined to make your life His message, ultimately you will become Him. That is what is Sayujyam.
Yeah, in fact, in Sayujyam, Swami says, you will not exist at all.
You will not exist at all.
There is only one without a second. And it is understandable that we are finding it hard to define, because it is something that words cannot describe. As the Vedas and the Shastras say, yato vacho nivartante aprapya manasasaha. That state of sayujyam is something which cannot come under the grasp of mind. Because
yes.
As Swami simply put, you are not the body, you are not the mind. Where is the place for I? So since it transcends both body and mind, it is something which the mind cannot grasp.
Correct.
And since speech is an outcome of the mind,
mind.
It is not possible to articulate what it is really.
Yes.
So sarupyam is really the need of the hour, and if we are able to put that into practice, that is, we have to realize Swami's teachings. Enough we have read, enough we have heard. Listening and hearing and reading is good to the extent that we get to understand what he is saying. But having heard him, it is important to focus on the meaning of what he has said and have an experiential realization of that. Until that happens, actually there is no progress. So that is a very critical aspect of a devotee's life, to have an experiential realization of Swami's teachings in his or her life. Now and here, there should be not a second's delay. The intense yearning to realize his words in our life experientially should have such intensity and such a sense of emergency. It's more important than being alive.
Yes.
And when a devotee develops that kind of sense of urgency, that sense of emergency with prayer to the Lord, Swami, allow me to sit in my original seat.
Right. Amazing.
That grace of Sadguru alone, only and only Sadguru's grace can help us understand. No amount of intellectual jugglery, no amount of reading or understanding can help. Only direct experience, which none other than Sadguru, Parabrahma, Paramatma, Satya Sai himself can confer. Nobody else can. It is not possible
yes.
for. Yes. For those who have understood that self, that Satya Sai, that Sadguru is none other than their own true self, even they will realize.
Yes.
In fact, there is this beautiful episode where Professor G. Venkatraman sir was speaking about atheists and theists. And I hope you remember that episode where he was talking about whether liberation can be attained by theists or atheists, you know. And sir had given his definitions, and Swami was listening to this Radio Sai discussion in Yajur Mandir. And one of the brothers who were serving Swami asked Swami, Swami, is it possible for atheists also to realize themselves? Or it is important that they have to be theistic in their viewpoint? And Swami said, both theist or atheist, both of them can realize. The basic requirement for realization is you have to drop dehabhimanam.
Yes.
That is, you have to drop identification with body. And as we just discussed, body, not just the gross body, there's
yes.
four levels.
Yes.
Gross, subtle, causal, supra-causal.
Yes.
That is, stool, sukshma, karan, mahakaran. All four are bodies. You have to drop dehavimanam, that is, identification with all the four. But then it doesn't matter whether you're theistic or atheistic in your viewpoint, because the viewpoints happen only in the mind. And what is essential for realization is to transcend the mind. So where is the question of theist or atheist?
This might sound a bit heavy, how to drop your association with all the bodies. And if you see, Bhagwan, he actually made it simple for us. This whole month, the Sai organization is observing it as the month of giving and forgiving. And if we have to make our lives his message, and if you want to ponder on what was his message, in one word, it was love. Whatever discourse he gave, whatever was the interaction with the students, whether he quoted any story from the scriptures or whether it was a verse that he sang, ultimately it was prema. And Swami made it very simple for us that we may not be able to understand the intricacies of everything, but he just said, if you can love, love genuinely, love with no condition, no reservation, no expectation. Love lives by giving and forgiving. And I think if we can practice this to whatever extent we can, we would be moving in that journey from Salokyam to Sarupyam. And this whole month is all about that. And let us pray to Bhagwan that this journey acquires more intensity from this moment onwards, so that in times to come, when people see us, they should be able to see Swami. When people listen to us, they should feel it is like listening to Swami. When people are in our presence, they should feel there is some aura of the divine. And I think that is one way that we can live up to being the Lord's instruments. We can live up to walking on that path of sarupyam, which will ultimately lead to sayujyam.
What you have just said so beautifully will happen naturally. It's not something that we need to pay attention on. Our focus really should be on Swami's, on realizing Swami's teachings, not simply reading and
experiential
realization of Swami's teachings. And if that experiential realization grants us the vision of the true form of Satya Sai, which is the Supreme Self, if that vision is had both inward and outward, that is when we know that actually there is nothing other than Satya Sai.
Yes.
Not the physical form.
Yes.
The true form of the Lord.
Satya.
Satya.
The truth.
Sat.
Yes.
You know. So when that experiential realization happens, automatically what you have just described is just a byproduct or a side effect of that.
Absolutely. You know?
Again, one thing is the conscious effort to look like that in others' eyes can lead to a sense of ego and stuff.
You cannot make any conscious
effort. Yeah, it is not possible. No amount of makeup will work in this.
You can only keep your mind concentrated on him.
Yes, yes. Absolutely.
That's the only thing you can do. So that you become a channel.
Yes.
That is the only thing that you can pray for. And you will, it all depends on the intensity of our concentration on him.
That intensity of the yearning
is the key. Is the key.
With the prayer to the Lord.
Yes.
Lord, let me sit in my original seat.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Brother Giridhar. I think it was a very, very ennobling and enriching session. And I'm sure all the devotees who are listening to this would have found something in it to take home, take within and use it judiciously on their path to sayujyam. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brother Vishu.
Sai Ram. With that, it's time to conclude this last leg of Thursday Live, coming to you from the studios of Radio Sai. Dear listeners, if you have any queries, comments or any suggestions on this program, please feel free to write to us. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much for being with us throughout this program and throughout this beautiful Thursday. We offer ourselves at Bhagwan's lotus feet for this beautiful opportunity of sharing his message and his life with all of you. With prayers at his lotus feet, I take leave. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.